Chunky was very musically gifted from an early age. His voice could always be recognized in church singing the different parts of the choir. He loved to play the guitar, but strings were hard to get. He found it was easy to carry a drum, so he made his own and always had one or two with him. He could sight read music very well and later would often be called upon to lead the company band. Writing poems and putting them to music with the guitar was his favorite pastime. But Chunky had a definite plan of action and he had a very mature attitude about his future. Joining the Army would be his stepping stone from farm to the medical corps, then on to medical school. He'd already proven his scholastic abilities by being at the head of his class each year. Chunky was very humble about his abilities and always made his peers feel celebrated. Everyone that met him got a good first impression. At the time of the organization of the 153rd Regiment Pennsylvania Volunteers Infantry, David Knaus was 21 years old. Most of the regiment's officers and enlisted men were close friends or neighbors. Raised to war fever by the attack on Fort Sumter, he was amongst the first to respond to his country's call. To him belongs the honor of being one of the first who rendered his services to the government and was accepted. His inborn military spirit and patriotic impulses prompted him to respond to President Lincoln's call for 75,000 men in the year of 1861. This noble act gained him the esteem and well-placed confidence of the other men that he had encouraged to seek early enlistment.
I was ready when the war broke out, but my parents refusing their consent to my enlistment, I went over to Caston and went to work on the Lehigh Valley Railroad. And when the 153rd was being made up, I stole myself away from my parents and enlisted in Company D. I do not know who wrote to my family about this, but when it was time for us to leave, my mother was there to see us off. She gave me a new hand-knitted scarf, a copy of the family tintype, and a kiss on the cheek. I keep the tintype in my shirt pocket at all times.
David closed the diary and placed it in the front cover of his Bible. Then he very ceremoniously wrapped the books in the scarf that his mother had given him. He could still smell her scent on the handmade cloth as he placed it in his haversack. The examining surgeon and mustering officer tried to run some of the men in as substitutes with the Enrollment Act. The Civil War truly began to be known as a rich man's war and a poor man's fight throughout the entire nation. It was possible with enough money to hire someone to take your place in the draft, a substitute soldier. The $300 commution fee was an enormous sum of money for most city laborers or rural farmers, and the cost of hiring a substitute was even higher, often reaching $1,000 or more. When David refused to do so, they offered him $1,100. David told them,
"There is not enough money in the state of Pennsylvania to hire me as a substitute soldier for another man."
Chunky and David were conspicuous in the two battles, Chancellorsville and Gettysburg. And in both these great conflicts, they were entitled to great credit for their soldierly conduct. By the time the regiment passed Washington and reached camp on Virginia soil, the devastation of war had become real, and some of the boys began to realize that entering the Army was not going to be a picnic. They began to learn that the privations were part of a soldier's life, and to think of the good things that they had left behind at home. The cloudy water of this place did not compare with the limpid streams of old Mr. Bethel's hillsides and the pure water which bubbles up from the base of the Blue Mountain in the site of their home. They missed the cakes and the pies at their mother's table. One of the boys was heard to say, "Oh, if I could only get home and get a drink out of our old spring." But they were told to be courageous, for they had enlisted in the cause of good and could afford to undergo self-denial.
The Blue Mountain boys were as worthy in soldierly qualities as the Green Mountain boys of revolutionary fame. From close and constant relations with these men of my company during the 10 months we were together, I can say they were men that could be relied upon for the doing of faithful duties whenever called upon. When our regiment reached Alexandria, We were shown the building in which the young and gallant Colonel Ellsworth was shot while descending the stairs from the roof where he had replaced the national flag, which had been pulled down.
After the winter of 62 and 63, the spring gave indications of active service all along the lines of battle.
The entire Army of the Potomac, then encamped on the north bank of the Rappahannock River, was ordered to be in readiness for an aggressive movement. On the morning of the 27th of April, 1863, the advance began. The Army moved in three columns, crossing in different places. General Hooker's plans for getting his army across the river were well made and successfully accomplished. Having his forces now where he wanted them, and the positions and other conditions satisfactory, he was greatly elated, and his address to the men was the occasion of great enthusiasm all along the line. How successful his plans were remained to be told. At this time, it was confidently expected that by the movements then going on, all railway communications between General Lee and his base of supplies would be severed. The Army of the Potomac was now supposed to be in such a position that there was nothing to prevent it from moving successfully on the enemy.